Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This is a good time to be thinking about your summer plans, and I urge you to consider studying at Pardes in Jerusalem. Pardes has programs for people at every stage of life, every level of learning. Please go to our website and check it out. In addition, I want to remind you that this coming autumn, for 1 year only, there's free tuition at Pardes for people who qualify. Again, information is available on the Pardes website. I urge you to take this opportunity with the lower airfares to go to Pardes, go to Jerusalem, and spend some time studying there. It is a magnificent opportunity, and you'll have a wonderful time. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreus discusses Vayikra 19:14, which is in Parshat Kedoshim, which will be read this coming Shabbat. This happens to be one of my all-time favorite psukim from the Torah, and Rabbi David Levenkreus discusses it in depth. There's a handout for this podcast. Please see the prior episode. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. I've just returned from the Yom HaZikaron, the memorial service at my son's school for those soldiers who died defending Israel. And it was a very moving ceremony. And although my words today have got nothing directly to do with soldiers and the sacrifices that they made, nevertheless, it's always good to learn Torah in people's memory. And I'd like to dedicate my words today in memory of those people who made this wonderful state possible. And that's what I will do. Let's imagine a really poor novel. Somebody comes to you for advice. They do not realize that you have a stake, that you have a claim in the issue that they're asking you advice about. And so you give them advice which is bad for them, but good for you. Advice that is very much to your advantage. In addition, because this is a person you know well, you happen to know that this person is having a difficult fight against their alcoholism. And the next time they're at your home for a party, you make sure that you have a particularly good bar, and you steer the person in that direction, knowing that they will not be able to handle the temptation and will help themselves. This indeed happens, and in one fell swoop, you have destroyed this person's business as well as their reputation. Now, we could not sue you in a court of law. People give bad advice all the time, and you didn't force the alcohol down this person's throat. There was alcohol there. You pushed them in that direction. There's nothing that we could do to sue you in a court of law. But as many of those of us listening may know, there is in fact an isur, a prohibition in the Torah, called Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol, that we should not place a stumbling block before the blind. And both things that I did in this scenario would in fact be transgressing this prohibition. The full pasuk reads in Vayikra 19:14, Lo tekalel charesh, you shall not insult the deaf, v'lifnei iver lo titen michshol, or place a stumbling block before the blind, v'yiratem Elohecha, you shall fear God, ani Hashem, I am the Lord. And this idea of lifnei iver lo titen michshol is used by the rabbis to prohibit a large number of acts which technically could not be judged in a court of law, but in reality can be causing people to do much harm. What we're going to do today is we're going to try and look at the different understandings that the rabbis had of blindness, and using our understanding of what blindness is, we're going to try and explain why the pasuk, why the verse, did not stop at the word michshol, stumbling block, and instead felt the need to add, v'yiratem Elohecha, ani Hashem, and you shall fear God, I am the Lord. What does God and the Lord have to do with it? So let's take a journey and go through these different concepts, and then we will try and understand the pasuk in all its richness. The first idea of what blindness could be is that it's somebody who can't see. I was actually rather surprised to see this. This is used so often in rabbinic thought in a metaphoric way that I was actually very surprised to see that there are people, the Svorno, Rambag, the Torah Tmima, who actually see it as talking about placing a physical stumbling block before a blind person, of not putting something on the ground where it's possible that it could cause harm. The Sforno writes, She'af al pi shelo tazik b'yadayim, even though you're not doing any harm with your hands, hinei tigrom hanezek, still you are causing him damage. Rather like the case with the alcoholic, I didn't force the alcohol down his throat, I didn't actually push the blind person, I didn't trip the blind person, I put something where I knew they would be going. Nevertheless, the Sforno says, this is something that we should not do. This may seem like some type of an act of cruelty, a very childish act, but sadly we know that there are even adults who would do something like this, either out of spite or because they think it's funny, you know, somebody fell, ha ha ha, look at that blind person. But I think this insight can go deeper than that. I once read a very disturbing, not a Jewish, a very disturbing saying, which said, if you see a blind man, kick him. Why should you be kinder than God? Indeed, ancient, medieval, and perhaps even some modern people saw blindness as a punishment for something that you'd done wrong. So if I see somebody who is blind, I can assume that in some way God or the world is against him, and why should I not add to it? This pasuk is a way to prevent us acting this way. It's saying, hey, wait a minute, whatever reason the person might be blind, and many of us nowadays, of course, would not see it as a punishment for a sin. Whatever a person has done, even if you believe a person has done something wrong that has made them blind, we still have an obligation to treat them with compassion, to treat them decently. It's not our job to punish them. So the first idea of what blind is somebody who literally can't see. But what happens if it's not physical blindness, but a lack of knowledge? Again, we can go back to our bad advice example. The person did not know that you had a stake. And indeed, the rabbis prohibit taking advantage of people's lack of knowledge. In the Gemara tractate of Moed Katan, on page 5a, Lifnei Iver is taken to refer to Tziyun Kvarot, to the marking of gravesides. In ancient times, when people went to the temple, they wanted to be pure, tahor. The priests needed to be pure if they were to work in the temple. And it could be that somebody traveling to the temple would not realize that they were walking over a graveside if the graveside was not marked. Therefore, says the Gemara, whenever there is a grave, it should be marked. Here, you're sitting at home, you're really not doing anything, but nevertheless, we need to look out for other people. We need not to put a stumbling block in their way. In this case, it's not a block. In this case, actually, we have to put a block, but it's a block saying that it's a graveside whose aim is to protect people. So we have to look out and make sure that people are not misled. The Sifra gives a more fanciful idea. It says, suppose somebody came to you and said, is the daughter of this person fit to marry into a priestly family? Can't she marry a Kohen? There's certain prohibitions, there's certain women that Kohanim, priests, are not allowed to marry. Can this woman marry into a priestly family? And the Sifra says, don't say that she's fit if she's disqualified. Similarly, if somebody asks your advice, don't give him counsel that's not right for them. Don't say leave early in the morning, which means that maybe they'll be robbed by robbers. Don't say to them, leave at noon, when maybe the sun will shine. Don't say to them, sell your field and buy a donkey, when in fact this will enable you to take the field away from him. We're not allowed to trade on a person's inexperience or lack of knowledge. When we go to a friend, we don't know whether the advice offered to us is good or bad. We don't know about their ulterior motive. Nechama Leibovitz, the famous Torah scholar, and we'll refer later to a few things she said also, says remarks about how comprehensive the statement of the Sifra says. A forbidden woman is speaking about something that could harm your soul, where a journey is asking about something that harms your body. And how could my body be harmed? It could be harmed by robbers, i.e. people. sunstroke, which is nature, or by trade, which is monetary loss. What the Sifra is saying is it's all-encompassing. The Sifra doesn't use words for the fun of it. Anybody who lacks appropriate information in any area may not be led astray. So we've seen that blindness can refer to actually physically not seeing. We've seen that blindness can refer to lack of knowledge. Now we become a little bit more metaphoric, and we're speaking about blindness of temptation. A little bit again, going back to our alcohol example, I know something is wrong. I shouldn't do it, but it's there, and it's too hard for me to withhold. I'm blinded by my emotions. And again, we all know it, how it can happen. Any one of us who have had to try and stick to a diet know how hard it is. We know that we shouldn't eat a certain food. We know we're going to put on weight. We know it's not healthy, and it's very easy to do it. And there may be some of us listening who have had to deal with things more difficult than keeping on a diet, who've had to deal with cravings or addictions, whatever it might be. And we all know how hard it is and how important it is that the people around us support us in this endeavor. So in the Masechet of Avodah Zarah, page 6b, the tractate of dealing with idol worship, we read, Shelo yeshit adam kos shel yayin lenazir, ve'ever min achai livnei noach, that we're not allowed to give a cup of wine to a Nazirite. A Nazirite has taken a special vow, a Nazir has taken a special oath, not to drink wine, and non-Jews are forbidden according to the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, the seven Noachide commandments, not to eat limbs from a living animal. We cannot cause others to do sin. We cannot provide the means for them doing something wrong when we know that they may succumb because they are blinded by such strong emotions. A similar idea is found in Baba Metzia 75b, Mi sheyesh lo ma'ot u'malveh otan shelo be'edim, that livnei iver refers to one who has money and lends it without witnesses. Now, what's the matter with that? It would seem as if, you know, why should I, if I lend money and I trust the other person, why should I insult them by saying that I should be using witnesses? What the Gemara is afraid of is that later on there may be a dispute. Later on, it may not be clear how much money was lent. And then what will happen is it will look as if I've done the person a favor, but in fact I'm tempting them. I'm tempting them to cheat, or they might honestly just forget. Therefore, whenever I lend, I need to lend with witnesses. We see how far-reaching the rabbi saw this. This is really going ma'alu me'ever, above and beyond any need. But I think the rabbis realized in a very, very profound way that to create a good and moral society, we need to worry about things beyond the letter of the law, but need to try and create the structures in the world in which goodness is able to flourish. A little more serious case is found in Bava Metzia. We know that there is a prohibition against usury, against lending with interest. And the Mishnah, in this case it's a Mishnah, the Mishnah says that the malve, the lender, the love, the borrower, the Arev, the surety, and the Edim, the witnesses, and some people even say the Notarion, the Sofer, all of these transgress against lending with interest. And it's very, very interesting. The borrower is seen as being over, as transgressing Livnei Iver, the concept of not putting a stumbling block before the blind. Why is the borrower doing it? Because he's tempting the creditor. We may tend to think as the creditor as being the one who's doing something wrong. But maybe the borrower is doing something wrong as well. If there was no market for drugs, people may not be tempted to become drug pushers. Again, we normally tend to think of it the other way around. But again, we see how far-reaching the rabbi saw it, that even the borrower has caused the lender to be tempted, and of course the lender has tempted the borrower as well. A final example of this particular one, and there are many examples. Again, we're back in the tractate of Moed Katan, page 17a, where Lifnei Iver refers to B'makeh Libno Gadol HaKatuv Medaber. The verse, the Torah, is talking about a man who beats his grown-up son. What is the problem over here? There is a prohibition again in the Torah of a son hitting his father. And it could be that if a father hits his son, the son will forget this prohibition and will hit back. Again, a tremendously powerful and strong example of how I should not create the circumstances in which evil can happen. So we've seen that blindness can mean not seeing. We've seen blindness can mean an absence of knowledge. We've seen that blindness can be tempting somebody, creating the situation for them to do an avera. The next two categories will expand on this even further. What about people, for example, who have incorrect beliefs? Idolaters, Jews who do not believe, idolaters, whether they be Gentile or Jews who do not have the right beliefs. And again, we're back on tractate Avodah Zarah, this time in the Mishnah. We learn that we're not allowed to do business with non-Jews 3 days before their festival, because they may be using what we sell them in order to serve their gods, and we are thereby providing the material for the service of idolatry. And this is expanded in the Shulchan Aruch, the code book of Jewish law, where in Yoredeah 151:1, it says, Dvarim shehem miyuchadim lemin minei elilim, shebaoto makom, objects that are unique to gods of a certain place, asur limkor lo'ovdei otam elilim shebaoto makom. We cannot sell it to the people who serve these gods. Even with non-Jews, even with people who are idolaters, we are obligated to make sure that they do not have the wherewithal in order to do their evil deeds based on their incorrect beliefs. We just mentioned evil deeds. The blindness of over here is blindness to the truth. You don't know the truth of the Torah, or at least of God, or the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. There's also another kind of blindness, which is of immoral practices. Either you don't know something is wrong, your moral system doesn't regard something as wrong, or perhaps you know something is wrong, but your desire to do it overcomes you. In this vein, we have two quotes. In Talmudic times, not the Jews, but wild animals would be used in different stadiums to kill people for sport. There would be a trial in the basilica. If the person was sentenced to death, they were thrown off platforms in order to fight the animals. And the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah says, Ein mochrim lahem, we don't sell to them. Them referring to the people who do these immoral practices, dubim, bears, v'ariot, and lions, v'chol davar sheyesh bo nezek l'rabim, and anything that can damage the public, ein bonim imahem, and you cannot build with them, basiliki, a basilica, gardom, a scaffold, et stadia, a stadium, ubima, and a platform. All of these could be used for this horrible sport, and we are to have nothing to do with it. Similarly, the Rambam says, we cannot sell lethal weapons to weak or dangerous characters. We can't sell arms, heathens. In this case, the assumption is that heathens are evil heathens. We're not talking about people today, but people who are evil. We can't sharpen them. We can't sell them a knife or collars or garters or chains of iron, anything that they're going to use to hurt people. And similarly, not only is this forbidden to heathens, but any evil Jew. One is not allowed to do this. Anybody who will use it for an evil way, we are commanded not to sell to them, according to the Rambam. We cannot be an accessory. Even though this person knows what they're doing, they're blinded, and we are prohibited from selling to them. So, ladies and gentlemen, fine listeners, we have seen a wide gamut of ideas, be it physically not being able to see, a lack of knowledge, temptation, incorrect beliefs, or immoral practices. A lot of things fall under the rubric, under the heading of blindness for the Pasuk, Lifne Iver Lo Titen Michshol. So now, let us use it to try and understand where God comes into this. With all these very, very interesting and very inspirational, to me at any rate, ideas, where does God come in? But before that we do that, I want to just make one halachic comment. This is obviously not a halacha shiur. We're using the comments of the sages to understand the Torah better. But from a halachic viewpoint, much depends on whether you are the sole supplier or not. So if there's something that you're doing that you're not sure it's the right thing to do, and this is of interest to you, obviously you're welcome to learn it or to speak to email me about it. But also you may want to speak to somebody who knows halakha and whom you trust to have guidance on this issue, because there are cases where if you're not the sole supplier, the halakha is not as demanding. Where does God come in? What has this got to do with God? The pasuk we translated as Lo tekalel charesh v'lifnei iver lo titen mekshol, don't insult the deaf or place a stumbling block before the blind. Ve'yirata me'elokecha ani Hashem, and you shall fear your God, I am the Lord. Everett Fox, in his wonderful, wonderful translation of the Torah, translates this not as just full stop, period, you shall fear your God, I am the Lord, but rather you are to hold God in awe. In other words, what we've just done by insulting a deaf person or putting a stumbling block before the blind, what we've just done is not holding God in awe. It's very easy to hurt a deaf or blind person. They're weak people in society. The blind person cannot see. The victim may not even ever know that they've been used. They may trip over the stumbling block and say, oi, what a pity, but not realize that they've been hurt in any way. For this fear of God is the only real sanction. Sometimes in life, whether I keep the law or not depends on my conscience rather than on legal enforcement. And who knows my conscience? Who knows my conscience? God is the one who knows my conscience. All of these cases are things that nobody but God, God's self, is able to see. The Sifra, which we quoted, goes on to say that we can pretend to be innocent, but God, and sometimes only God, knows our motives. Rashi, echoing the Sifra, says that God is able to perceive the motion and motive and intention of any act, and that we will become unable to access the plea, I meant well. I meant to give good advice. It just happened. I forgot to put the sign next to the grave sign. I dropped the stone by mistake. The alcohol was just there. I forgot that non-Jews aren't allowed to eat this. I was doing him a favor by lending without witnesses. No, says Rashi in the Sifra. These are things that can be only judged by God. And you know something, ladies and gentlemen? Sometimes that's the importance of God. There are things that we do which nobody else knows about. There are things that we don't do that nobody else knows that we haven't done. And it's hard sometimes to go to somebody and say, you know, I know I sometimes go to my wife and I say, oh, I've got a big piece of gossip, I've got a big piece of Lashon Hara, but I'm not telling you. Aren't I great? But, you know, it's a bit childish behavior. And sometimes that's just not a good way to go. And on the other hand, we are human beings. We're just human beings. Sometimes we do need affirmation that what we've done is right. And that is where God comes in. God is the one who knows that you have not even slightly tried to tempt somebody to lend with interest. God is the one who knows that you've stopped yourself from hitting your son because you know your son might hit you back. God is the one who knows that you haven't done business which could have really been to your advantage because you were worried about what would happen with the object that you sold. God is the one who knows that you didn't sell things to people that are dangerous. There's a force that is beyond us. And if we have a proper perspective, if we understand God, then it'll make it easy for us to understand that we have got to create the world that God wants to do. The Chaim Leibowitz perhaps says it the best, is that we're talking about the conscience of the individual. This is beyond the jurisdiction of the court, but is only up to the individual and his or her relationship with God. And so, yes, it would make a poor novel and even poor personal practice to give bad advice to somebody and then to get them drunk and to destroy them in such a way. It would be a wrong thing to do. And what Lifnei Iver is telling us is that ultimately we are responsible for the welfare of others and shall not do anything to undermine it. You and me, we are all responsible for creating and making the world a better place. I said at the beginning that my words were not directly connected to Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day, and I meant it when I said it. But when I read this, I'm thinking, as I speak, responsibility for the welfare of others and not doing anything to undermine it. I think perhaps that is a very powerful message for us to take with us on this day. The idea that people died and our job of those who are around is to create a good and a holy and a wonderful society where people care about each other, and that perhaps is the best way we could memorialize those people. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.